two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, final hour of the show. Hans and Scotty. Hans out this week, but hey, we're halfway through it, folks. We're almost there. Just got a pesky Thursday and Friday left, and then we're done. The big man will be back. He'll have all kinds of stories. Hopefully he didn't get attacked by a stingray again. But I'm sure there's going to be some story about him getting into some level of trouble, because you can just count on it.
Always is.
Always is. Arm wrestling dudes, getting into trouble with the locals, all kinds of stuff. I'm not even making stuff up.
You know what? He cuts loose like a couple times a year.
Yes.
And when he cuts loose, he cuts loose.
Yeah. When he gets sideways, decisions. Watch out. All right, joining us now, BYU insider for KSLSports.com, really good dude, and breaks down BYU better than anybody else. It's Mitch Harper joining us. Mitch, how are you?
Doing great, Scotty. Happy to be on with you. I heard a bit of your interview with Michelle Bodkin, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Scotty. This day, signing day, used to be incredible, and it's just a shell of its old self, and hopefully we get back to a day with this, you know, 12-team college football playoff era coming up, that the signing day just maybe has its own standalone day and it actually means something again. But nonetheless, I'm always happy to be on with you because there's still a lot to unpack with BYU.
Well, there is. And, you know, normally I ask, I asked Blake Anderson this, I asked Michelle this, and I'll ask you because I know the answer to this. There's usually not a lot of surprises, but BYU went down to the wire on a running back that I know they're really fired up about.
They are fired up about him. L.J. Martin, you know, 6'2", 205-pound running back from El Paso, Texas. He had offers from Stanford, Texas Tech, Baylor, Kansas State, kind of the heart of the Big 12. And he was a Stanford commit, and he flips to BYU. BYU kind of got in the picture around December 1st, and it was kind of a microwave recruitment where it was, you know, a really fast-paced deal. And he was impressed with the academic side. He's a smart kid and really kind of values things maybe beyond football. And from that side of things, I mean, he doesn't know much about BYU, but he liked what they had to offer on the academic side, paired with the opportunity of being in the Big 12 and going back to the state of Texas. And there was a lot to like there. And he picks BYU, so it's a big get. And I think he joins a running back position group that they've got Aiden Robbins from UNLV, who you probably saw firsthand at the Mountain West Conference. He was really good last year. He had off-season wrist surgery, Aiden Robbins, so that's kind of something to monitor. But they also bring back Falau Rapati, Hinkley Rapati, and Miles Davis. So it's a pretty good running back position group, and I think L.J. Martin adds to that. And he might be a guy that could be in the two deep in year one. He's pretty impactful. Even Kalani Sitake today drew comparisons to Tyler Allgeier. Kalani does not do that. He does not draw comparisons to anyone, but when he does, these guys tend to be pretty good. So I thought that was pretty noteworthy today.
Anything else that surprised you today, or was everything else pretty much what you expected?
Everything was pretty much as expected. I mean, there was a little bit of maybe a mild surprise in Motikai Monga, 6'3" defensive lineman from Tippview High. He last week put out a top four that didn't include BYU, but it seemed like it was kind of one of those silent commit deals where he signed back in December and BYU had it in tow, but kind of maybe enhanced the drama a little bit. And he joins BYU. He's more of a developmental guy long term down the road. But I think, you know, BYU's roster is an okay place. I still think that right now it's a roster that's probably definitely in the back half of the Big 12. I'd say probably in the bottom quarter of the league. I think there's still a long way to go. And I thought it was kind of refreshing to hear from Jay Hill, the defensive coordinator for BYU, that he's like, we're nowhere near ready for the Big 12 as far as personnel. And I think this is going to be a team that's pretty active potentially in the May 1st to May 15th transfer portal window, where they might, you know, have to push out some guys after spring ball and try to add some additional bodies to really bolster the depth, because I think that's one of the concerns that I look at with this team in 2023. Knowing what the schedule is now, I still have those questions about how much depth BYU truly has, and I think it's maybe not as deep as they've had in recent years.
Is there spots available? Have they kind of carved out a few spots that are available, or will they need to push back some guys if, you know, some stellar opportunities pop up in the portal?
It would have to be some pushing out after spring ball. You know, we did find out today that spring ball will start March 6th and it will conclude April 15th, which is a little bit later than BYU typically does. They're kind of shortening up the weeks, not as many practices in a single week, so they'll stretch it out farther. And after April 15th, they'll have exit interviews, and wouldn't be surprised if we see some guys, you know, maybe let them know really where they stand in the program, and they might have to turn to the transfer portal. So because BYU, they juggle so many names when it comes to return missionaries with gray shirts, with these transfer portal, and then you got the returning letterman. There's so many names that it goes well beyond the 123 that you can carry on a fall roster. And so they'll have some attrition, and Klum even noted that today. But I think that, I still think along the defensive line and offensive line are going to be areas where they have to bolster, and maybe a wide receiver as well, too, because they're starting wide receivers, projected starters with Chase Roberts, Keanu Hill, and Cody Epps. They'll be good. But after that, I think there's a pretty big drop, and I think they would probably be well served to try to add a transfer portal wide receiver coming up in the spring session.
Let's, and it's interesting because I think when some kids hit the transfer portal, there are fans out there like, oh my gosh, we lost another one and lost another one, not knowing that sometimes there's conversations with coaches, as you mentioned. They'll bring a kid in and say, hey, look, you know what? We offered you a scholarship and we'll honor that scholarship, but you'll never play it down for us and you'll always be on scout team. If you want to leave and go get playing time, we can find a spot for you. Go hit the portal and we'll make some phone calls and we'll see what we can find to get you the playing time you deserve. So it's not always a kid just leaving because he wants to leave. Sometimes he kind of gets gently pushed through the door a bit. Has there been anybody that has left BYU in the transfer portal that really surprised the coaching staff, or really, it was like, okay, that one hurts. That's a rough one.
Gabe Judy Lally, the cornerback who ended up at Tennessee, he would have been a starter for BYU. I think that was a big loss. Now, getting Eddie Heckard from Weber State was a massive addition for BYU. Jay Hill, declared for the NFL and was set to pursue the NFL draft, but he decides to enroll at BYU, and that was a huge coup. But losing Gabe Judy Lally, a guy that started in the SEC at Vanderbilt and started pretty much all of last year at BYU, that was a surprise. And Heckard and Judy Lally could have been a nice tandem for BYU at cornerback. So that one was surprising. I think Clark Barrington was a little bit of a surprise in the fact that that he went to another college. I think the thought was this was his last year at BYU. He was moving on to the NFL. The fact that he went to Baylor, That was a little bit surprising, and I think he's been pretty candid that you know he regressed. He didn't put out his best film, and maybe there wasn't as much alignment of the thoughts of how he's coached up with the offensive line. So he goes back to Jeff Grimes, the guy that he flourished under. It's a shame that BYU doesn't get Baylor because there would have been so many great storylines with that one. But those are probably the other only ones. Everyone else was pretty explanatory, where it was either a playing time situation or a young guy maybe not enjoying his time at Provo, whatever it may be. Those were guys that that moved on.
Mitch Harper, BYU insider for KSLSports.com, joining us. All right, so let's get to the schedule announced yesterday. BYU, it's official. I mean, we all knew it was coming, but actually seeing it on paper and seeing dates attached to it, I know that was a special moment for a lot of BYU fans out there.
It really was, and cause I do think that it was, you know, just I think, you know, I joked on Cougar Tracks how they've sat through the old, you know, Big 12 teleconferences where they're waiting on the words of Dave Boren and Bob Bowlesby to announce something, hoping that they have any sort of mention of BYU, and BYU's kind of had a whirlwind when it comes to conference realignment over the decades, I mean, even earlier before 2010 and 2011. So to actually see BYU in the Big 12 and have it be 1 year with Texas and Oklahoma and get both those teams, I think that was, you know, quite the, it looks surreal for BYU. And I think that it honestly validates and made, you know, kind of makes independence worth it, because really independence, when you look back on it, and Kelly Papinga, I think, said it best today at signing day presser, you know, you could sugarcoat it all you want, but it was what it was. And there was a lot of limitations that came with independence. This is a higher standard that BYU's ever experienced. And I'm just fascinated to see how BYU can respond to a schedule where they've never faced a schedule where you can draw up, you know, 7-8 straight losses for BYU. They've just never lived in that world. They've never operated in that space. They've always had schedules where you know, have baked in 6 wins guaranteed. Yeah. And, you know, if you can muster up a few bounces go your way and 2 or 3 of them, you could have a special year. They've just never had a schedule like this where you might be the underdog in 7 or 8 games, and that's just new territory for BYU. So I'm really curious to see how they respond to it and how they can navigate this and what type of outcome they can put together.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Well, it just in the spirit of transparency, I mean, we keep an eye, and I know you and Nate keep an eye on web activity and things like that. But from our standpoint, from, you know, podcasts related to BYU and online listening and things like that, we would see obviously a real big spike in September and October. And then November rolls around and, you know, Idaho State's coming to town, and it just, and most of the games are on the road, and you just see, you know, excitement kind of dwindle a little bit in November. Now you get a crescendo with 2 really high profile home games in November. I don't know what the record's going to be at that point, but the fact is BYU now for the first time in 11 years is going to be playing meaningful November football games. And that is just a huge boon for the excitement of the program.
No question. And I think that, you know, an 8-4 season, if that happened, I don't think it would this year, but if it did, you know, that is a success. It's a resounding success. And then you carry that over into the following year against similar opponents and try to build on that momentum. Whereas you struggle to define successes with 7-9 win seasons in the independence. You know, you look at the norms in college football and said, that's above average. You're playing better than most, but it just felt like it was not impactful on the national scene of college football. And I think that, you know, being in the Big 12, you kind of get lumped into the national conversation by, you know, national writers, and the national narrative gets so much focus onto the Power Five. We'll see how it shifts, if it becomes just more about the Big Two with the Big Ten and SEC. But the Big 12 is going to be a league that creates a lot of intrigue and headlines, and BYU will, you know, just like you said, it'll be meaningful football to the bitter end, and it'll have a carryover. Because even if, you know, it's a losing season, if you, you know, developed a bunch of years where there's animosity with some certain Big 12 team, that can just, you know, be something that adds juice to the end of a schedule. I mean, that's been sorely lacking since BYU left the Mountain West Conference, because that was always the crown jewel. Even if there was nothing on the line against Utah, there was just that heat, that intensity that came with that rivalry game. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's going to be something that emerges in the Big 12 that levels equals Utah, but that could be. You never know. Or TCU or whoever, Baylor, someone could emerge as the rival, and that could be something that you build up excitement regardless of how your season plays out. So it's a huge deal for BYU, and I just don't think that anyone honestly ever envisioned it happening. And I think that the timing worked out masterfully for BYU, because if Texas and Oklahoma are not the first ones to bolt as the big domino, if it's UCLA and USC first, I think we're talking about a completely different landscape, and BYU's maybe left on the outside looking in. It all worked out perfectly for BYU, and they've got a great spot in the Big 12 that looks to have a stable future going forward with Brett Yormark as the commissioner.
I am all here for the BYU-Oklahoma State end-of-season rivalry. Let's just, you know, Kalani Sitake versus why am I spacing the name of their head coach? I'm a man. I'm 40. Mike Gundy, yeah. Look, let's get the rivalry juices flowing there between those two. But, you know, it's the other thing, too, and I don't know if it just was a fluke of the schedule or if it was, you know, the power of BYU or whatever the case is. The fact is, they're the only newcomer that gets both Oklahoma and Texas on their schedule. And I actually think Oklahoma and Texas, this is going to be their last year. And if that's the case, that's a really nice feather in your cap to be able to play those two, especially with OU coming to your place in November. That's not a bad thing to look at all.
It's a big deal. And I think that, you know, when the reports are out there, you know, about Texas and Oklahoma looking down on the newcomers, I don't believe that really applies to BYU. I mean, there's been a good working relationship. You know, BYU's AD, Tom Holmoe, is really close with Joe Castiglione, the Oklahoma AD. You know, Holmoe views him kind of like a mentor in this profession. They work closely on the NCAA selection committee. Chris Del Conte at Texas, Holmoe's pretty close with him from their time in the Mountain West when he was at TCU. So I think there was like a good working. The real hangup, I believe, was Texas not wanting to go to UCF, because UCF was the one team in the newcomers that doesn't get to host either Texas or Oklahoma. And there had to have been some sort of upset. I mean, that could have been potentially one of the delays. Who knows? But I think if you're going to play one of those newcomers, I think Texas and Oklahoma are like, okay, we'll play BYU. BYU's been a program that's played really the who's who of brands in college football in Provo. And, you know, I think it's credit to BYU fans. There was a lot of, you know, who knows, you know, social media and message boards aren't a real gauge of society. But, you know, the Oklahoma fans seem to be pretty excited at the idea of going to Provo and playing in that game. That's going to be one of the hottest tickets I think I've probably ever seen for a BYU football home game in probably my lifetime. So that's going to be quite the spectacle to see the Sooners. And you think about the history when Barry Switzer back in the day is looking down on BYU in the 80s and 1984. I mean, that program, that logo is in Provo. That's a pretty big deal for BYU. And, yeah, to get them, both of them, in this swan song potentially for those programs, that's a big deal for BYU. And it really can be, you know, great data for these newcomers in the new Big 12 going forward when it comes to media rights. And you can really sell the future of this new iteration of the Big 12 if a BYU can spring an upset against Oklahoma and say, hey, you know, this, you know, it's, I know Oklahoma's brand is elite, but, you know, it's just, sometimes we get caught up in the moment in college football, and that could be something tangible that you can build momentum off of for this new Big 12. I thought the schedule makers in the Big 12 did a really excellent job finding ways to create storylines each and every week and maybe have a game emerge that kind of captures a national audience in the sport. And I thought they did a pretty good job with piecing together the schedule.
Well, and also, too, you're looking at a situation where, you know, they could have been really rough on BYU on road games, and you only have one really nasty road game in terms of mileage, and that's West Virginia.
Yeah, I thought the schedule kind of played out well. I mean, you can draw up a scenario where BYU maybe starts out 5-0. I don't think that happens. I would probably err on the side of maybe 3-2, but you could take down Arkansas in that non-conference game. Arkansas is not a juggernaut. I mean, they looked amazing against BYU last year, but Kansas, who knows what they'll be? I mean, they got Jalen Daniels at quarterback coming back. He's one of the most dynamic signal callers in college football. It's going to be a real, I think, thorn in the Big 12. But the Cincinnati, I think they've taken a huge step back with Scott Satterfield as the head coach instead of Luke Fickle. You could see BYU starting out hot, and then you know, who knows where the narrative shifts and the confidence and the chemistry, or it could be, you know, 2-3 and BYU's slogging along and the realities of Big 12 football really kick in because this schedule played out pretty well. And to get Oklahoma at home and to get, you know, get a chance to maybe rekindle something with TCU will be kind of fun too. I don't know if those fans at TCU really think anything of BYU anymore. I don't know. But I know back in the day with the Mountain West, those were some electric games that were must see in the national college football landscape, and maybe if you can rekindle some of that rivalry from that, that'd be kind of fun too.
Before I let you go, you know, we talk about the football team and a lot of good and exciting things going on there, but what's going on with the hoops team? Why the struggles? And look, I mean, there's been some head-scratching losses and then just some gut-punching losses to Gonzaga and St. Mary's.
BYU basketball it's been shocking to see that they have no tempo and they can't knock down the three. You know, coming into the year, Mark Pope wanted to be one of the fastest teams in college basketball. They're anything but. So that's been a complete surprise that they haven't been able to really install that up-tempo style of play that Pope wants, because that's what they want to be in the Big 12. They don't want to be the slow-down, methodical St. Mary's team that they kind of are right now, and St. Mary's execution's just off the charts. They're nowhere like them, but tempo-wise, they are. And that's got to change going forward. I mean, I always looked at this year as maybe a team that gets into the NIT, so I'm not completely worried about the long-term prospects of BYU. I think this offseason is going to be fascinating to see what Pope can do with an NIL collective, because last year they lost out on guys like Antoine Davis, who's at Detroit Mercy. He's pouring in, you know, 25 a game. He's one of the top scorers in college basketball history. He's chasing Pete Maravich down. They almost got him. And it really came down to a lack of a true collective, maybe kind of sealing the deal. And basketball, I just feel like if you can get one star like that, that changes everything. And you're going to probably need more than one to go through the meat grinder that is the Big 12, where everyone's a top 40 team every night. But if you can get one in that portal next year, we've seen Pope has had the ability to get BYU in the conversation. He nearly got Mac McClung, who's been a guy that's bounced around the NBA, been a two-way contract guy in his pro career. He got Matt Harms. Like, he's shown an ability to get BYU big time, or get them in the conversation, or get visits with big time portal guys. That's going to be really the true story of what this can be, because I think this year they just wanted to identify some pieces that they can build with. I think they've done that with Spencer Johnson, Jackson Robinson. Dallin Hall's got a bright future at guard, but can they land the big time experienced veteran portal stars? That's going to be the challenge. Pope told me that he did not want to sign anyone in the November signing period because they couldn't afford to get any younger than they already are. So it's going to be all hands on getting that portal, getting the veteran guys in April. And if they can land someone, maybe they can surprise some folks in the Big 12 a little bit. But man, that league, BYU basketball is staring down a road of where it's going to take a while to really maybe dream up, where they're even getting entertaining maybe 18-win seasons. It's going to take a lot of time.
Mitch, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us, and let's do it again here soon, okay?
No problem. You bet, Scotty. Take care, man.
Mitch Harper, one of the best out there. You can read his stuff at KSLSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, BYU Insider.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.